What's up, party people? It's me, Rich. I'm back with another episode of BTC 2.0. This is episode 25. We made it, folks. Another 75 more creator interviews to go, and then we'll see what happens from there. But this week, we're talking to Steve Orlando. Check it out. Guys, welcome to the show. Steve Orlando. Steve, what's up, man? How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, man. It's a pleasure. You're a very busy guy.
We're trying to be, yeah. No, you know, I'm actually, you know, we're coming hypothetically out of the dark tunnel of the pandemic, and it's you know, this all started to happen, and I was like, holy shit, I need to sell as many books as possible, because who knows when things are going to come back to normal. And I was very lucky, because I was able to get a lot of stuff going, and now we're and actually on my end, most of the real crunch period is done, and now you folks just get to see all this stuff I've been working on for the past 18 months. So it's actually pretty reasonable in my life now, but we're still, everything is still coming out, which is, it's a good moment to be in.
That's really cool. So during the lockdown pandemic, like 2020 nightmare, you were hard at work, basically.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there were a couple publishers, I should especially shout out Aftershock, who never paused production at all, that, you know, really came and stood by me and a bunch of other creators. And, you know, they said that this is business as usual. So I, you know, I leaned in and I tried to get a lot of stuff going, because we didn't know when folks were going to unpause and sort of return to a relative normalcy. So yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, as we all know, life didn't stop, and my job is making comics. So I said, shit, I got to make a lot of comics.
Right, right. And plus, like, you know, I think most creators, right, you're in your house, you're writing away, you know, or you're drawing away for the most part, right? You know, like, I know that, you know, what's your typical pre-pandemic and during the pandemic, what's your typical writing process?
I mean, so I'm a little more methodical, I know, than some of my peers. So, I get up at 7:30 and I'm usually working by 9, and I usually work from 9 at least until, like, on a good day, I can clock out like a normal person around 5 or 6, because that's when I walk my dog. But that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's like 9 till 8. Sometimes it's like 9 till 11. Sometimes it's ongoing. But at least for me, I try to keep it like a real structure, like a traditional job, because otherwise your life just, you know, there's no boundaries. Like, yeah, we work from home, but if I don't keep office hours, then suddenly nothing is off limits for when I can, you know, when I can actually relax, when I can't relax, and things like that. So I keep it pretty regimented. And yeah, the big thing that I lost is that, like, getting out of the house and going to the gym in person was my time to see people and like, you know, at least counter the amount of vitamin D supplements I have to take by stepping out into the sun. Right. We did lose that for a while. I would just step into my office and do, which is where we are now, and just do exercise stuff here. So it's nice to have that back in Boston. Mm-hmm. But yeah, relative to other gigs, you know, it was not that big a change. I was working from home and leaving once a day, and then I was just working from home. So compared to, like, my boyfriend who's a teacher, where, like, last year was not like nothing else he'd ever done, we got pretty lucky.
Yeah, I think if you're in that, like, kind of like that freelance sphere of somebody who can make their own schedule, I feel like a lot of last year was like, yeah, you know, like, I'm still doing the same thing, except, like, it kind of sucks. This aspect of it sucks a lot, you know, or it's like, this has slowed down, but it's okay. You know, you just got to keep, like, you just had to keep your mind active. Did you grow up a comic book fan?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I had a longer journey than most trying to break into comics. Probably, you know, I went to my first con and started trying to break in the late 90s, and I was like 12 years old. And this is because of articles about how they came up with Electric Blue Superman at the time. Like, okay. I'm from Syracuse, and the Post Standard ran this article, of course, about how Superman is changing forever. But I was fascinated. I mean, I like the costume, because I still think it's a great costume, but but more than that, they had these little, like, it's not bullpen bulletins, because it's DC, but whatever they called it back then. And they had like a round table talking about how they did this whole redesign. And I was just really fascinated with that process. And it's when I sort of realized I'd probably want to be on the writing side versus the visual art side. And I mean, I got to it. I started going to conventions and networking and meeting people. Not that I expected to get a job at 12. I expected to get a job at 15, like Jim Shooter did in the 60s. You know, what have times changed? We don't know. Yeah, so it took me till I was 28, actually. But I just, yeah, so I hustled and I was on that side of it as an aspiring creator. And I was on that side of it pretty much throughout the duration as a reader. I was like passive. Because we didn't have a comic store per se in my hometown. We had some in the greater area, but not in my hometown, and I couldn't drive. I was, you know, nine. So at that point, it was like a lot more of like back issues I could find at the flea market and things like that. So I or trading cards, actually. My father was a sports or is a sports memorabilia dealer.
Oh, wow.
So I don't like baseball. So instead I would go and collect all the non-sports cards at shows. So like I was a comics fan, but it's mostly from random out of order back issues. And then who looked cool in trading card sets, because that was my axe. And of course, cartoons and stuff. Until they started doing comics at Walden Books in the 90s, late 90s. And then I was all the way in.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the bookstores I miss, definitely, because they used to let you sit around and read graphic novels and not bother you.
A spinner rack at Walden Books, man. That's where I read. That's where I met Ben Reilly. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So I feel like that's such, I always love hearing those stories because that's such an interesting approach. And it's like, you know, pre-internet that we have now, you know, like late 90s, you had maybe like a forum or two and you could legitimately probably get a creator's email directly somehow at a convention, you know, whereas now it's a little tougher. Do you think it's tougher now to break into comics or when you did?
Oh, it's different, but there's certainly more. I mean, it's never been easy and it's still not easy. But there are a lot more assets to folks if you want to make comics, I would say, than when I, you know, we almost got rid of AOL when I was younger. So my mother didn't see a point. And it was still like, just go on the Marvel message boards. Like there weren't a lot of resources to meet other creators and things like that. You know, if you want to make a book, you know, you can join any of these crowdfunded anthologies. You can go on DeviantArt. You can meet people on social media. You can follow these hashtags to point out like amazing arrays of creators and visual artists of all sorts. There are ways to get your book made that simply just were not there when I was younger. But at the same time, because there's so much. And because there's so much, the expectation of so much access, certain areas that were easier for me are probably more impenetrable now. Because, yeah, like you said, the people that first got me into DC and the people that mentored me in comics for 20 years, I just went up to them a show, they liked me, and they just gave me their email address.
Right.
And the reality, unfortunately, because of how social media has sort of the worm has turned on it, is that that probably doesn't happen too much these days because your creators and editors are opening themselves up for abuse in a way that, you know, didn't exist back then. Half of my DMs are people angry at the other half of my DMs and me all the time. So, you know, there's probably a little bit more of a guarded nature when it comes to certain echelons. Yeah. That's a douchebag word, but whatever. certain zones of the industry are probably more closed off than before because, some bad actors have poisoned that well. I feel like it's like Judi Dench's speech in Skyfall, you know, like, so like, you know, like, it, like there are, everyone is way more accessible and in certain aspects, but because of that and because folks have taken advantage of that, in actionable ways, many of them are less accessible. You know, I mean, it's a great example, the email thing, because I don't give out my personal email now. But that's not just also like comics. This isn't about that. I think the world has changed, obviously, since 1997 when I got, you know, my mentor's emails and things like that. So, the breaking in, quote unquote, into Marvel and DC is maybe more opaque than ever. But making comics is easier than ever. And there's folks who are in now and feeling empowered that, you know, they don't need necessarily to travel the same path that I did because they have stories they want to tell. And now you don't necessarily need anyone's permission or sign off to do it. You can crowdfund that thing. You can join other creators who have like minds and create these projects, and you can get them done free of the sort of greater machine that was a necessity when I started out in 1997.
Yeah, that whole, everything that you just said is completely fascinating to me, especially with like that kind of rise of the internet and toxic social media culture where, you know, I've been a lifelong comic fan. I'm going to use the example of like New York Comic Con because I've gone every year since its inception. And you can tell like at some point it became like a creators being super happy to meet everybody to, hey, I'm only meeting like 5 people today. You know, or people not, I remember like, I don't know if we're around the same age, but I think I might be a little older than you, but I remember as like a teen, you had direct access as an artist to a lot of these guys at these conventions, you know, like that New York City Comic Con that was in the hotel pre-Javits Center.
Yeah.
You know, where they would do like 20, they would take 20 portfolios and review them like on the spot, you know. I don't think that's happening anymore for the most part. You know, it's like times have changed big time, whereas like that fantasy of like meeting Neil Adams or somebody and him going, hey kid, here's my phone number, you're on the right track, I think that doesn't exist anymore. But I do agree with you 100%. We're like,
I think that, you know, boundaries don't exist anymore. And I know, you know, right. I know, Rich, you also do a wrestling podcast.
Yes,
and
I do.
Like, a perfect example is like, you know, you have fans that like, there are times that wrestlers will want to meet fans, but then you have these guys that have no boundaries and stake them out at the airport. And those idiots at the airport are the ones ruining it for the folks that, you know, are essentially like, I don't want to say playing by the rules because there's no rules, but there is like being a decent human being. And in the same way, like I've seen people pitch it a couple Image publishers ago in the early 2000s, I saw someone pitch the current publisher while he was at the urinal, you know, like, and so this ability of like lacking all boundaries, it's endemic. But that's what creates, I think, what you're talking about. Like, you know, and by the way, like the vast majority of fans are incredible.
Yeah.
Then have these, you know, you have the comics version of these airport clowns, and you're like, well, you know, like we got to try to avoid those types of interactions. We start sort of changing how we engage with people.
Yeah, it is very fascinating. I feel like it's such a multi-tiered system now where like I can attest from my own experiences, like it's usually about the third or fourth interaction with a writer or artist where it's like, hey, you know what? let's be buds. And here's my phone number or here's whatever, you know, which is fine. I'm not one of those airport dudes, but, you know, like it's unfortunate that like, you know, like you really don't know until like that point if somebody's just going to turn around and like take a dump on you, essentially. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. And, you know, and the thing, too, that I was saying that is fascinating, like, you know, there are a lot of positives about the internet and social media in regards to comics in a way very similar to wrestling as well. You know, like I only ever wanted to work for Marvel and DC and Image when I was younger, but that's because we didn't really know about that you really could do much else, because, you know, in the same way that really only like 2 or 3 guys cover, I mean, obviously hundreds of thousands of people cover wrestling, but like the capital W word comes from like 2 people. We had like one magazine that told us what was good and what wasn't back in the day.
Right.
So I didn't know that you could be like an R. Crumb type guy, because that's not what the Wizard guys thought was cool. And in the same way, you know, like, yeah, plenty of people want to aspire and want to work at, you know, the big 2, but you have people that maybe just want to do their own, you know, sort of their own uncompromised brand of comics forever. A guy like Mike Kingston, who does Headlock, for example.
Yeah.
And they can do that because of crowdfunding. And I look at someone like, you know, it's kind of similar. Like if you look at a guy like Effie, for example, you know, his brand is so strong, and I'm not in his head, but there doesn't even seem to be a strong desire to go to one of the majors because he doesn't want to compromise it. I don't think he'd spend every Monday trolling Raw if he really wanted to work at WWE.
Right.
and yet he's crushing it. And because of the access, the counterpoint of everything we're saying, if you want to do that type of thing in comics, if you want to do that type of thing in wrestling, you can, and you can have this fan base, and you can crush it, you know. And that, you know, we're talking about sort of the dark underside of excess. So I should also say that careers like that were much harder and kind of not even told to us that they could have been possible when I was reading about how to get into comics in the 90s.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I think, you know, like you said, Wizard magazine didn't think that stuff was cool, but the counterpoint to that is also, I shouldn't say counterpoint, but the other side of that is, I think modern independent companies have more longevity for some reason. Like, Aftershock's been around for ages, you know, and they're still constantly pumping out books. And now you have like AWA, Boom has been around kind of forever. You mentioned Effie. I also want to throw Joey Janela's name in there, because for years it was like, here's this one guy doing like his own thing, you know, and then got signed by AEW, which I think is like a fascinating story.
I don't purport to know the business side of these things, but it seems to me like a thing like Game Changer is very similar to what the deal is for us at a company like Image, which is to say it's like a shared brand and it's a shared marketing arm and things like that. But really, you can go in and do, it appears that folks can, you know, if they can do whatever type of show they want.
Right.
You know, you can have Spring Break, you can have Gay Brunch, and you can also have like, Borscht at the Beach, where I was with Masha Slamovich when you emailed me about this, you know, like. And you can also have, I'm pretty sure Bloodsport is a Game Changer event, which couldn't be more different from those things. And in the same way, you know, when you work at Image, like, you're getting that eye and you're getting the marketing power and the name and all those things, but you also have free reign to do whatever you want. And like, I think that's very interesting, because it is a very, very different situation than if you're working on licensed books. And people always ask me what's better. I say that you need to do both.
Yeah.
I mean, not just from a fiscal sense, but because one feeds the other. You know, if you're working on Wonder Woman, like I did for years, you're adding to like this 80-year mosaic, and that's its own sort of challenge and interest and fascination. But then you get the urge to like create something from whole cloth, and that's when you go and do originals. And you can, and I think there are many more avenues as well to do that in between fully being like Samizdat, self-publishing, and working at the big two. There's so much more in between than there was when I was younger, for example.
Yeah, there's I find that fascinating too. I think it's very interesting. I agree with you 100%. I'm not in the business, so to speak, but you know, from the people I've talked to and the people I know, it's like, yeah, do the big two stuff, because it just makes you a little bit better and tighter with your work, but also don't forget about the stuff that's in your head that you want to get out there, you know. What do you have coming out now?
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
So in the past, this week or in the first week of October, forgive me, because release dates change all the time. I have Party and Pray, which is an LGBTQ+ slasher graphic novel, like an ode to 80s horror that I wrote with Steve Fox. That comes out from Aftershock. Coming out right now, in addition, I have Search for Who, which I wrote with John Sway. And it's a Jewish Chinese like action revenge book that I'm very excited about. That's coming out from Aftershock. For a complete pivot, I'm doing King Grimlock, a Transformers Barbarian book at IDW. It's Grimlock the Barbarian. I'm very excited about it. Just out in August as well, I had Rainbow Bridge, which is the opposite of that 80s horror book I did with Fox. We also did the launch of their young adult line, which is, again, it's called Seismic Press. And this book, Rainbow Bridge, is basically like, what if the Rainbow Bridge was the Bifrost, you know, and you could cross over and have one more adventure with your, you know, your best friend that you've lost in your pet. Wow. So that came out in August. There's so many things going on. I have to like look at my comps off screen here. And then also in October, the Boulay Brothers Halloween Takeover. I'm working with the Boulays from TV and Netflix's Dragula to take over heavy metal for a really awesome curated Halloween issue.
That's awesome.
It's great collaborators there. I mean, obviously, me, the Boulays, but also Alaska 5000 is on it. Katya Zembelochkova is on it. Evie Oddly, American Horror Story director named Axel Caroline. And then Steve Fox, who I mentioned I've worked with a lot, is also the editor of Razor Blades, James Tynan, and James Tynan's horror anthology that they created together. And for crossover fans, I am also featuring Dan Housen and writing a story with him. It's his comics writing debut in that issue. So that's going out. And that's all, not even to mention, I'm in the, we have the 80th anniversary of Wonder Woman. That issue is coming out probably actually next week. And I also have Darkhold coming out right now at Marvel, which is this big Scarlet Witch and Doctor Doom event that we've been simmering for a while. It's finally hitting. I'm incredibly proud of it. Just a ton of badass Scarlet Witch stuff in there, especially in the Omega issue, which is coming out in a couple weeks. And then that, you know, the big tease is that there is also two diametrically opposed genre-wise, but massive books in my mind. One is going to be announced next week that I'm doing at Marvel. And it's, I mean, in my opinion, it's the biggest opportunity I've ever gotten to join one of the best, if not the best offices in the industry. So very excited. That news is going to be out next week. But in the next year from TKO, I am doing a book with one of my good friends who I consider like a legitimate, not just like icon, but a legitimate, like a legitimate hero and humanitarian. And I have a big graphic novel that we've been working on for probably 3 years. Okay. That is finally going to shelve next year. That is just like in a totally different way than the Marvel gig, because this is just like real world shit. The biggest thing I've ever done. And that's finally going to be out, we hope, in 2022. So
that's awesome.
And I'm sure there's more. I'm sure I've forgotten things. Oh, there's a Marvel event you guys don't know about yet, too. Another anniversary event. So I'm all over the place. But as you said, that's how we get it done.
Dude, you might be the busiest person in comics right now, right? I would.
That's Donnie. He writes a book every 3.5 days.
That is true. That's awesome though, man. Like, and your accolades are ridiculous, man. Like, you've been doing this professionally for
6 years. So since 2015. Years?
Okay. 2015. Okay. That's awesome, dude. What does it for you about wrestling? Talk to me about that. I want to do a little add on too. Did you see the GC emo thing that they did last week?
Okay, so I mean, bury me in the comment section, but emo has never been my type of music. So I will admit I tried to watch it, but the pure amount of emo became overwhelming for me, and I had to turn it off. But that said, if it is your thing, much respect. You know, there's plenty of things that I like that other people don't like, and that's fine. Yeah. So really like the idea of the show, and you know, much like any number of other things, I'm very happy it exists, and I'm happy for it to exist somewhere else. But I did like that they had people just playing the songs live. Very pleased with that. What is it about wrestling? I mean, honestly, funny you're wearing the Sting shirt. I'll be completely honest. I've been friends with Mike Kingston from Headlock for years. We're from the same town.
That's awesome.
We went to the same college and then we lived in the same city, but we had to go to San Diego to meet each other and find all these things out. So, but I was also a jackass, I still am, but like for years specifically, I'd always be like, oh, Mike, the wrestling guy, like, is this guy, whatever happened to the snake, you know, like, was he still, and he was just like, you're an asshole, but yeah, he's fine. So, but you know, everybody has a way back in. I liked it as a kid. I dropped off when I got into high school, but then I was back because of the guy in your shirt. When I heard Sting was going to the E, I was like, I gotta watch. Like,
Sting shirt.
Oh God.
move
back. So I have plausible deniability.
There we go.
So I was just like, he was my guy, you know, like much, you know, much like liking DC and Pepsi. I was a WCW guy.
Okay. All right.
As a kid, obviously my tastes have evened out as an adult. So Sting was my boy, you know, like, and my heart still breaks that they fucked up Starrcade 97, but,
oh my God, were you more of a Surfer Sting guy or a Crow Sting guy?
Oh, no, absolutely Crow Sting. I mean, because he was a superhero.
Yeah.
Like that was the original thing. Like I was in originally to wrestling because Sting was just, I mean, he was just Batman basically, like including coming down from the rafters and the makeup and the the music that as a kid I loved and now is like such a painful James O'Barr sad man, like the opening monologue, like the opening, like when a man's heart dies and they have like the sad kids. I'm just like, okay, like give me the like ice metal thing he has now. Yeah. Anyway, so I was in and then I got out. Well, honestly, I might have stayed in if WCW didn't tank and get bought, but it didn't. Okay. And I didn't really care. Like, I only really liked Kane back in the day. And I didn't understand face heel dynamics, so I just kept getting angry that Undertaker would win.
Okay.
So anyway, but then Sting came back and I still didn't really care. But I was like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
You know, and then but by complete coincidence, after Emerald City Comic Con 2015, they had Mania 15, whatever that was, Mania 32, 31, 31 on at my hotel. And it was Sting versus Triple H.
Okay.
And like the like stars had aligned because it was the live broadcast and I just happened to walk by and there he fucking was, you know, like walking out with the drums and like still being like a freak of nature at that time, even though he was like 55. I mean, and now like he's still doing stuff at 62 and you're like, what, who are you? But I know. So I went back and I watched that whole thing. And as it turned out, that ended up being, I think, one of the better Mania cards of the recent generation. You know, there are some duds, but you got that crazy RKO at the beginning. You got Danielson winning the IC belt. You got, you know, Heist of the Century, one of the better calls Michael Cole's ever made.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I was kind of in after that. And that's when I started going to more indie shows with Kingston and starting actually, cause that's where he sells comics in addition to in comic stores.
Oh, right on.
And I just started meeting guys and really sort of realizing that a lot of what these folks do is very similar to what we do in comics. And that I don't necessarily mean what they do in the ring. Cause obviously we just, all we do is trade barbs with each other on the internet. We don't like, you know, beat the shit out of each other. But what is very similar about it is like the people that you meet on these, especially like Z level shows, like they just really love doing this.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah,
it's, a, and it's, and it's a job that you don't get paid a lot for, especially when you're at the outset. And it's a job that a lot of people don't know is even a real job. And that's very similar to comics. Like you have to be so passionate and so self-motivated because everyone in your life will say, well, this can't work out. This can't be a real job. And do they even make those anymore? And so I first connected on a real visceral level with just like the journey that folks take, because it's a very similar to the journey you take in comics as an up and coming creator. Like you have to be your own motivator because, you know, I mean, look, my parents told me to give up and quit probably 3 times a year, every year for 20 years, but I'm a stubbornness, you know, I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. And yeah, so it's really the journey behind the scenes that folks take that first made me sort of lock in as a fan. And I do love these sort of yeoman-like show business aspects of it. You know, like it is, I think, one of the last few really like everyman type forms of entertainment. Like it is definitely a little carny. It is definitely a little like I like how strange it can be.
Oh yeah.
And that's probably why you see me talking about like indie wrestlers and indie shows more. Cause I'll watch stuff on TV and I like the production values and the athleticism, but more so I like being like there when a crowd is really excited just like, you just have people who are doing this out of sheer passion and sheer drive. And I would much rather, you know, like when you message me, I was at Borscht at the Beach. I was on a beach in Rhode Island and like Alley Cat and Masha Slamovich were doing Death Valley Drivers in the ocean. You know, things that you couldn't see on TV, but those are just like, that's that real like entertainer crowd connection that I think is really sort of organic. And that to me is what has made it, it does make it really special.
Yeah. It makes it fun. It makes it super, super fun. I think that's like one of the things that I love about wrestling. I always talk about this on my show too, where it's like, when you see stuff like that, I think that's so much fun and it gives people like such a weird thrill, you know, like I didn't go to GC emo last week, but I saw the clips and I thought it was funny. I think the funniest clip I saw was Nick Gage yelling at the crowd to sing My Chemical Romance's Black Parade, you know, which is it's bizarre, but it's like, oh, this is funny.
Yeah, there are members of that band who are very big wrestling fans.
I can imagine.
But no, I mean, I agree. Like the best example is like, I kind of have to like force my boyfriend to watch televised stuff with me, but he will go to a live show anytime because it's not necessarily just about like, it's certainly not about thinking it's quote unquote real. You know, but it is about that whole, it's about the whole thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's about the show. It's about the crowd. It's about being able to meet and support the people you like with merch after and all these things. You know, it feels really like a community. And knock on wood, I found that like indie wrestling fans tend to be pretty positive, tend to be.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
You know, versus like people screaming what on television and making me want to like crawl through my TV and strangle them all.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, like that. I like that weird toxic fandom that's like, I bought my ticket. I can act like an a-hole. Like that's worst case scenario, you know.
But, oh, sure.
We went to Chicago for All Out a few weeks ago, and it was like, I gotta say, it was the nicest crowd on the planet. And my wife actually came, we had an extra ticket. She does not care about wrestling, but at the end of the show, she was like, this was like going to see like, I don't want to say like an Ozfest, but like, this was like going to see like a stacked like metal show, you know? Cause like we go to like a lot of different shows out here, and it was like that rock concert atmosphere, you know, which was very, very cool.
But I think a lot of, you know, I really tend to myself gravitate towards these. I said yeoman like before, and I should just say like more raw types of entertainment, and that just like, you know, because you don't get paid a lot if you're on the indies doing wrestling, and it's, and it's often for folks who don't have a lot, you know, and I find it similar, you know, again, back in the day, like comics were that type of publishing, you know, you can get them for like a quarter, actually, you can probably get like 10 for a quarter.
Yeah.
And in the same way, you know, I guess it shouldn't be assumed, but I've met a lot of drag queens, for example. And that's a whole podcast I'd love to do someday, where you get one from a wrestler and a drag queen on, because in reality, much like in wrestling, the people I know who have been most successful in that field, again, a field usually that was formed for folks who maybe don't have a lot, you know, like it's the same thing where your drag character is just you, but turned up to 15 instead of 10. And then, you know, for folks who are here for comics, like the best wrestling characters, the common adage is that it is that person, but they're just exaggerated up to like 15. And I think it flows across a lot of forms of entertainment. I think there's a lot more connections between them than we think. And it is all, I mean, I guess that's my own podcast pitch, is drag queens and wrestlers. But overall, I just like those sort of raw, I don't want to say punk because that's a douchebag thing to say, but like lo-fi forms of entertainment that it's not like you're not watching some of this like perfect like sculpture of a performance, but you're watching something that's really passionate and real. And those are the types of things across the board that I gravitate towards.
I think it's more appealing too, especially if you're seeing something like that live, and it's okay that there's hiccups in a performance, you know, it just makes it a little better, you know? And like, if that's your taste, I agree with you 100% on like the punk stuff.
Oh yeah. I can't like, I don't know what it was like, you know, and that, my opinion of that and like small botches and things like that goes all the way to the top. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it's so privileged of like a subset of people to be like, oh, like you couldn't hit your 650 Phoenix splash correctly. Like, okay, bro. Like, like these are real people doing a thing. And I at least am pretty forgiving of stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, cool. Yeah, these folks are busting their asses to entertain you, and like, oh, you like missed the punch a little bit, I'm out, illusion ruined, go fuck yourself. Like, you know, like,
yeah,
these people are often putting their lives on the line, especially if they're doing, you know, wild high spots, or if you're a deathmatch guy, literally sometimes, and you're like, oh, my illusion.
Yeah, like, all right, it's, man. it's so weird dude. Like, I think those folks are, if somebody's like, this guy missed a punch, I hate this now, did you really, really enjoy it to begin with? You know, I feel like a lot of folks hate watch the stuff that they say they like, you know, but yeah, it's excusable.
And that never happens in comics either, by the way.
Oh yeah.
But no, I mean, I just love, I'm going to tell a story now, and I won't say who it's about,
okay,
because then I would be burying someone, but,
fair enough.
I love that. There's something very specific about, I shouldn't even say that. Like, I use comics lingo. Everything to me is like comics lingo.
Okay.
And that is especially true, I found, with folks in the wrestling scene. And this goes to like you know, if you're watching Dark Side of the Ring or something, and you see, I don't know who it was, Kyoto or Tenet, one of them up there, and like, oh, like, and everything is kicking out. Like, oh, Scott Hall's maybe going to die of a drug overdose, but he'll kick out.
That was like, Kyoto, yeah.
Can you just talk like a fucking human? Like, it is, it's amazing to me. But I did, like, I have a friend, and I would tell him, am I going to see you at this show? Am I going to see you at that show? You know, like, and I would realize they were never Northern shows. And finally, they were like, well, I don't think I look good in jackets. So I just don't sell the cold. I don't like selling the cold. And so because of that, I just don't go places I would ever have to admit that I get cold or wear a jacket. And I'm just like, you are truly insane. You know, like you're truly mad. Like you don't want to admit that you as a human being get cold. Is wild to me, and yet I find it so endearing.
Like, oh yeah, absolutely. There is that, like, a touch of that carniness is very endearing. Too much is too much, you know. Like we met and interviewed Rob Van Dam like a month ago, and we were like, all right, what's this gonna, you think, is this gonna be like a carny situation or what? And the dude was the opposite of what we thought, you know. He was like the nicest, sweetest person on the planet, you know. And he was it was great, you know. And like, it was kind of like funny, that perception of like, well, he's a journeyman, ECW, blah 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 blah, like all this stuff, but really, really cool dude. And that's a testament to like, you never really know sometimes, you know. Steve, I got a couple more questions for you, and then I'm gonna get you out of here. All right,
sure.
What's your favorite sandwich?
That's a loaded question. I mean, it's got to be the Cuban, actually. Oh, yeah. Like, I have a lot of like esoteric answers I could pick out, but I live in a Puerto Rican Cuban neighborhood in Boston.
Oh yeah.
And like, I mean, if I could without dying, I would just eat that every damn day.
Yeah,
that sandwich. Yeah, no, between multiple types of pork, you're like, all right, you're probably gonna die, but like, what a way to go. That's gotta be my answer.
Awesome, dude. Where can everybody find you online?
I'm on Instagram at the Steve Orlando, and I'm on Twitter also at the Steve Orlando.
Awesome, man. Cool. All right, I'm gonna let you run. I hope you had a good time, dude.
Hell yeah. No, I mean, I will always, I'm always happy to come on, especially if it's comics and wrestling. Clearly I can talk about that at length. So
awesome, dude. If you want, I'd love to have you on again at some point in like a few months or so. You know, we can catch up and talk about all the Marvel stuff that you mentioned that's coming out.
Yes. Well, the TKO. Other news, like once it's out, I'll be really excited to talk about that stuff. Cause it is, I will say, it's not a Demolition Man comic for folks who like, it is pointed out as being the ideal character for me to write between him being queer, angry, and a former pro wrestler. but it's not Demolition Man. Not yet. But
okay, I think a D-Man book needs to happen, though.
I mean, you know, like D-Man is certainly a phrase I've been avoiding saying in regards to him being a gay character, but yeah, no, I would. I mean, well, I'm sure. I'm nearly 100% sure I'll find a way to work him into something.
Awesome.
I'll be able to fit in D-Man, is what I'm saying. So during my career, we hope at least.
Awesome, dude. All right, man. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna stop. Steve's an awesome dude. I had a lot of fun talking to him. If you want to check out more of Steve's stuff, particularly this week, he came out with the Darkhold Alpha number 1 from Marvel. Check that out. And also, he just got named the new writer on Marauders. I'm super excited to see where that goes. I love those X-Men books, and I don't think they could have picked a better writer for that particular book. This week is also near Comic-Con. If you're watching this, I've been at the con for 2 days. I might be lost. I may have to live in the Javits Center. But check out this stuff, man. It's pretty cool. I love going there. It's such an interesting experience. And I guess I'm a glutton for punishment because I have my pro pass for 4 days. And I'm going to go all 4 days and just roam around like a wraith. Anyway, guys, hit that subscribe button. You're watching BTC Rich X on YouTube. Hit me up on Twitter at BTC Rich. And let's talk comics, man. And I'll see you guys soon. Later.